Friday edition of the Lars Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Orrick Home Centers throughout the St. Louis area, all locally owned and operated, all full of great vacuum cleaners and other stuff to keep your home clean. O-R-E-C-K spells Orrick. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss and Ian Geis here with me. And now news director Colin Jeffrey sheds his news director skin to put on the alter ego. The alter ego personality of Showbiz Boy. Hello, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just fine.
That's good.
It's been a very, very busy, crazy news week, but we've got a couple of movies we have to get to and other stuff. And I just want to mention one thing about this story that broke in the last half hour about these prisoners in upstate New York, because I think there's a movie corollary here. While we're reporting on this story and ABC's reporting on the story, and so is every other news outlet, and we know that one guy is dead, Richard Madden, and they're hunting after the other guy, David Sweat. I was just looking on Twitter, yet another news source, and the report from the authorities is that they are saying, we do not have eyes on him now. And as I'm reading through the various news stories in the last 45 minutes about this guy, I just think of every movie where there's a character on the run from the law, and they get somewhere to a cabin or an apartment or a house or wherever it is, and they go inside and they get their stuff off, and they always have to go take a shower, and then they come out of the shower, and they turn on the TV or they turn on the radio, and immediately there's a report about them, and it's starting. It's the beginning of the report about them. And now we'd like to update you on our latest news story. It's never, and so that's the latest on that. Now back to the guiding light. You know, and when they turn on the TV, it's never Family Feud or anything like that. Whenever they turn on, the TV's always on the channel that has a report about them immediately right then and there.
Yeah, that is a good point.
I would love to see some escaped prisoner thing, or not even escaped prisoner. It could just be, you know, one of these post-apocalyptic futures where somebody's running from the evil authority figures and he's holed up and he's just taking a shower and he turns on the TV and there's like a movie on, or or it's a Seinfeld rerun. Okay, I'll sit and I'll watch that. And he or she doesn't even think to themselves, I got to flick around and see what they know about me. But you can't in a movie. You must have that information immediately accessible to you.
We have to.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. I never thought of that, though.
All right. What do you got to review for us this week?
Well, it was a nice break from a very busy news week. I got to go watch a comedy, not a family film, Ted 2. Ted 2.
Okay. This is
the sequel.
This is from Seth MacFarlane.
Yes.
The man who made the unfunniest, and I ranked it worst, movie of 2014.
And I wouldn't disagree with you by much. It was a really bad movie.
Million Ways to Die in the West. Which, by the way, is playing on cable now. And I'm telling you right now, you may want to cancel cable after you see this thing. For letting that thing come into your house.
And so that was the most recent impression we had of Seth MacFarlane.
I've never had a positive impression of this guy. He ruined the Oscars. The year that he hosted
it. But I get it. Yeah, people really did not like him.
I've never watched his animated Sunday night show, Family Guy, or anything else that he's done, and thought to myself, ooh, this guy's talented and funny. He's just...
What he does really...
And he's touring the country now. Excuse me for interrupting one more time. It won't be the last. He's touring the country now with an orchestra and doing a big band like Harry Connick, Michael Bublé kind of show.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra type of show and stuff like that. He is actually a very good singer.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he is.
Very, very good.
Why don't you just wait for Michael Bublé to come to town? Why would you go see Seth MacFarlane?
I don't know.
His banter in between songs is funnier. I don't know.
Yeah. I love Michael Bublé, by the way.
Yeah, he's very talented. Yeah. Do you think people go to a Seth MacFarlane concert expecting it to be funny?
Maybe. I mean, sure. I guess, do you think he sings a song like Stewie or Brian the Dog?
No, he doesn't. He's bringing it back like the old days. He grew up. He said he grew up with Frank Sinatra, loved Frank Sinatra type of music and things like that. And he's actually doing a straight show like that. And maybe people will go in thinking there's going to be some funny banter going back and forth. And maybe there is. I don't know. But they could leave disappointed thinking, oh, he wasn't funny. He was serious.
When I was a kid, very, very, very young, probably 8 or 9 years old, my dad took me to a Steve Allen concert. Now, Steve Allen was the guy who created essentially what became late night comedy/talk television. And then he had a primetime show for many, many years. This is a long, long time ago. And then he wasn't on TV for a while. And my dad saw that he was coming in concert and assumed, as I think people might assume with Seth MacFarlane, oh, we'll go to see that. That's going to be funny. Steve Allen was a really funny guy. He'll do stuff with the audience. He'll do stuff. No, it was him playing the piano and singing and having a guy up there doing vibes with a whole orchestra behind them. That was the show.
Wow.
So disappointing. I'm 8 years old. I don't want to see that. No. I want to see comedy.
And Steve Allen was a talented singer as well and a piano player.
Yeah. And when he was alive, he would have told you, if you had asked him, he wrote more songs than anyone in history.
Yes.
To which I would have said, name two.
Yeah.
he wrote that theme song of his, This Could Be the Start of Something Big, and no one can ever name another one.
Oh. One of the funniest things I ever saw him do was stand up and read lyrics. Like Donna Summer's Hot Stuff.
Yes.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, he did not do that in the show that my dad took me to.
And that would have been good.
It was not funny. And I would guess that there are people who go to the Seth MacFarlane show and like, I didn't want to go see a fake Sinatra act. Just because he puts on a tuxedo, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But now he's got this movie Ted 2, which...
And Ted from 2012 was a surprise. People weren't quite certain what to think because it's a little CGI bear that comes alive. It's Mark Wahlberg's childhood toy. And it comes to life, and it exists that way. It actually is alive. Everyone knows who Ted is, that he's the walking, talking bear. And the first movie worked pretty well. It had the typical comedy pitfall of the first two acts are really funny. Then they try to tie everything up in the third act, and it's not funny because resolution isn't funny in comedy. The conflict is.
Mm-hmm.
So coming into this with pretty high expectations, but also it's a comedy sequel. Those typically aren't very good. I'm happy to say that this is just about as funny, maybe funnier in parts than the first one.
Wow. And the first one obviously made enough money for somebody to say, hey, let's do a sequel.
It made a jaw-dropping $567 million internationally.
Isn't it the largest R-rated comedy?
Oh, yeah. It's an
what?
S.
Yeah, it's the
I'm
largest
surprised they didn't
comedy.
Say, okay, we're making Ted 2 through 50 because it made so much money. So it's... Yeah, it was a huge success.
Now, I did not see the first one. And none of that money you're talking about came out of my pocket.
Right.
I did.
But was Seth MacFarlane the voice of the teddy bear?
He's the voice of Ted as well as the writer and director.
Okay.
And he's the voice of Ted, and he sounds just like Peter Griffin.
He really does. Yes.
Yeah. So he has one voice in him.
That New England accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're from Boston. I mean, it's got Mark Wahlberg being as Boston-y as Mark Wahlberg can be. So. Mm-hmm. It's pretty Boston-y.
Okay, so what's new in this movie, or does it even matter?
Well, they don't have Mila Kunis, which you'd think would be...
Ian's not going.
They replace her with Amanda Seyfried.
Okay.
Who does a very good job in this. I'm not a huge fan of hers. She's just sort of nondescript.
Mm-hmm.
Very funny in this. Plays a perfect sort of straight man for everything to go off of, all the jokes to play off. The premise of this is it's years after the original. Mark Wahlberg's character is now divorced from Mila Kunis. That's why she's not in this film. And Ted, who had a girlfriend at the end of the first movie, or at some point in the first movie, I guess, is now married to her. Her name is Tammy Lynn, and she is politely trailer trash, would be the best way to put it.
Okay. She's a human. She's not a teddy bear.
No, she's a human.
Okay, of course.
And so they get married, and then it flashes forward a couple
years. Wait
a
second. That just became legal today.
Well, that's what this is centered around.
This is Rick Santorum's worst nightmare. Now women are marrying teddy bears.
So flash forward a couple years. Ted and Tammy Lynn are having marital issues. They both have crummy jobs. So they decide the best way to fix their relationship is to have a baby. And this is when the IRS realizes they just had been overlooking it. Ted isn't human, so he has to fight for his humanhood in court. That's the overarching plot.
Wow. That's actually a little bit clever.
It's clever. They do a pretty good job of, by and large, ignoring it, like not delving to it's a bunch of.
They treat this stuffed animal like a real person.
They do.
Okay.
He wants to have the ability to have a kid and be married and have a job and all that.
Look, if Kermit the Frog can fall in love with a pig.
Exactly. So this movie, what it gets really well is it just sort of loosely sticks to that plot. It's a bunch of quick gags. You're watching scenes that are just strung together based on a trip. And that works really well. You don't have to worry about continuity and all of this. Mm-hmm. This movie has one of the grossest scenes you will see in any film ever by a lot.
Wow.
Just, it's tough to watch. It's so gross.
Okay.
It has several.
Wait a second. Worse than the first Jackass movie?
This is worse. This is awful. This is just like...
I can't even imagine that, Ian.
Worse than the Borat scene where he's wrestling with his assistant.
With the guy and they're naked? Worse
yes,
than that?
This is worse than that.
Oh, man.
This is just...
I actually would put the snow cone scene from the first Jackass movie ahead of that.
This is awful.
I can't wait to see it.
And they just keep going with it. And so it keeps building. So if you're a fan of gross out humor, this is going to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Dan Strauss says, I'm there.
Exactly.
That's on the poster.
Gosh. The other thing that Seth MacFarlane does very, very well is his sense of timing. In this movie, the timing is great. It's when you need sort of a wisecrack, it's right there. In fact, it may move along too quickly at times because the joke is done and they're trying to move on to the other thing. The audience was laughing so hard, I'm certain we missed jokes in there. Because it was just, you couldn't hear. People were still laughing, and the next thing was starting. When he misses a joke, wow, does it miss. Mm. There are about three of these that I sort of caught where that was a joke, and no one laughed. Mm. But there are so many other funny scenes that it really works really well.
Are people laughing out loud in the movie theater?
Yeah, this was a sold-out theater. And again, you know, my thought on movies that have to be seen on the big screen, horror movies, action movies and comedies, because if you watch this at home, you probably wouldn't laugh as hard. But when everyone else around you is laughing, they act like the warm-up comic. You start laughing more. Mm. So go see this in theaters because it's funny.
Sometimes when I'm there and everybody else is laughing and I don't think it's funny, I think to myself, what is wrong with you people?
That's a movie critic in you, though. That's part
of
it.
No, that's just my natural reaction.
Celebrity cameos. There are a handful of them in this. Every single one of them works. They all make sense to be in there. They're all funny, and they handle them very nicely.
Are there more celebrity cameos? I know this is impossible, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Are there more celebrity cameos in this than in the Entourage movie?
If you take the first 5 minutes of the Entourage movie, there are still more celebrity cameos. There's like, I think there are four or five as I'm thinking back on it.
Okay.
And so it's funny. It drags once or twice. It's an hour and 55 minutes, which is long for a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It could probably be about 10 minutes shorter. They deal at the end. It just one scene. It's about a 5 minute scene gets too heartfelt and sort of you're trying to evoke emotion. I don't care if Ted's a person or not. I just want to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not important to me. And it's a comedy. So it's not as if it's going to end with everyone dead. So, you know, it's probably going to be a good ending. Comedies yep. kind of have to do that.
And you also know there probably is going to be a sequel.
A Ted 3. I'm shocked there wasn't a preview for Ted 3 before Ted 2.
Mm-hmm.
because they're just going to make 1,000 of these. But that all of that said, you still have to deal with an interaction between Seth MacFarlane, who's not a good actor on screen, and Mark Wahlberg, who you either love or hate. I think Mark Wahlberg is very endearing in this. He's kind of funny and vulnerable, and he and Ted have great interaction with one another. That timing between Seth MacFarlane, chemistry on screen, where you know he's just acting to what amounts to a stuffed puppet that a guy in a green suit moves around.
Mm-hmm.
It works really, really well. They are funny together. I laughed quite a bit at it, and I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Wow.
Which shocked me, because I was going
in. That shocks me.
I was going in, really, I've got good expectations, but this is a comedy sequel. If you haven't seen the first one, the only gag you're not going to get is that they know Flash Gordon, the guy who played Flash Gordon in real life.
Yeah.
And he's in this.
That was the first one. I love that.
They know Flash Gordon, the actor who played him, and it works again really nicely. And
Flash.
Just, yeah, this is not for your 13-year-old at all. Not at all. It is, they hit some race jokes really hard, but they are funny. And there's one joke in there. I'm not going to say anything else in this. St. Louis will take particular interest in, and there were actually like cheers after it. It was kind of funny.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, go see Ted in theaters.
Ted 2 is out now.
Ted 2 is out now.
You know, you mentioned Mark Wahlberg, and I was just looking on IMDb about some of the stuff that he's done, and I forget how many good movies this guy has done, mm-hmm. Starting with Boogie Nights. He did that movie The Fighter with Christian Bale.
Yes.
A movie that I was kind of disappointed in a couple of years ago called Lone Survivor, which gave away the plot right there very early on. But he's also made some stinkers, like earlier this year, that movie The Gambler that came out that was absolutely terrible. And the one he did with Denzel Washington, Two Guns, and another one called Broken City.
And the worst acting I may have ever seen in a movie, Transformers Age of Extinction, he was in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so
was he in The Perfect Storm?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, that's right, he was.
Yeah.
He was also in The Departed, Scorsese's movie.
Oh, that's... Yeah, he was great in that.
He's good in that. He was in Shooter. He's been in a bunch of good stuff. The Italian Job, the remake that they made back in like 03 or 04. That was really good as well. So, all right, Ted 2, I didn't see it, but Colin gives it a 7 out of 10. I don't have any movies that I've seen on the big screen to review for this week, but I do have 4 movies that I tried to watch at home, either on DVD or streaming. Tried is the operative word. One, I actually recorded because I really liked the original of it, and then it was on FX, which meant I had to fast forward through commercials, and it meant that the language was cleaned up a little bit, so I don't even know why I tried. Maybe that had some impact on whether I liked it. But this was the 2012 remake of Total Recall.
Oh, with Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell, yes.
Yeah.
And Kate Beckinsale is in it. And if you haven't seen the original Total Recall, I think it's one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's best movies.
Yes.
And it's got Sharon Stone and Rachel Ticotin. That was the first time I ever saw her in a movie. Haven't really seen her in anything else, but she was very good in that. And Ronnie Cox was the evil villain, Cohagen. And he was really, really good in that. But what I liked about Total Recall was, although it got a little bit cartoony, particularly towards the end, and Schwarzenegger is a living, breathing cartoon himself.
Yes.
The science fiction of it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you were actually not 100% sure whether this guy was crazy or was having this actual experience or whether it had been induced in him by going to recall and having these memories implanted in him. I thought it was very, very, very well done. So I thought, well, it'll be interesting to see how the remake is. Well, first of all, Colin Farrell and Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're not nearly the same type. You know, Arnold is this gigantic muscle man, and Colin Farrell is this kind of short little non-action hero kind of guy. So it seems odd to have him in that. Plus, the whole movie is done in a post-apocalyptic future where our planet has almost been completely wiped out. There are only 2 countries left. One of them is Australia, and one of them is England. And the only way you can commute from one to the other is the workers live in Australia on the colony, and they commute to England through a machine that takes them through the center of the earth and out the other side. Remember when you were a kid and your parents said, don't dig all the way through to China?
Right.
Well, these people dug all the way through to Australia.
Yep. Wow.
And it, you know, it's that kind of gray future where it's always wet and everything's run down and there's garbage everywhere.
St. Louis?
No.
Oh.
Here's the thing. I know the original movie.
Himself over there.
I know the original movie pretty well. And so I'm watching to see how those elements are transferred to this world that Colin Farrell's character is. And they just don't work. I gave it a half hour and then I went, I cannot take this anymore. And I turned it off. So then I had a couple of DVDs sitting in my house from Netflix that, to be honest with you, I think have been there 5 weeks. I've just had other things I had to do, but I said, okay, I'm finally going to sit down and watch them. One was a movie that came out within the last year. How long is it usually before a movie that opens in theaters comes to DVD? Could it be as short as like 5 or 6 months?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This was a movie called The Homesman, which I got because it was a Western that was co-written by, co-stars, and was directed by Tommy Lee Jones, who I really like. You see Tommy Lee Jones in a movie, the man can't give a bad performance. So I thought, all right, I'll get this. And this movie is about Hilary Swank, who plays a single woman who lives out in the middle of nowhere during frontier times near a town where some women have gone a little bit crazy. And the town realizes they've got to get these women, quote, back east, wherever that is. In this movie, by the way, they're in Nebraska, so back east, I'm not kidding, is Iowa. we've got to get these women back east to Iowa. No one in our area would call that back east. We'd call it back north. But they've got to take them, and none of the men want to do it. And so Hilary Swank, who runs her own farm and is kind of a sturdy, tough kind of woman, she says that she's going to do it, and she enlists the help of Tommy Lee Jones through some rather impractical, unbelievable means. And they're going to take these women. 35 minutes into this movie, I turned it off. It was just so boring. The pacing was just so slow. And I did not care about any of the characters, the mentally ill women, Hilary Swank, or Tommy Lee Jones characters. 35 minutes, that's it. Don't rent The Homesman.
The Homesman.
It's a waste of your time. Then I said, let's check out one of the other discs I have up here. And I don't even know why I put this on my Netflix queue or when. But I had Clockers, which is a 1995 movie based on a Richard Price novel. The movie was directed by Spike Lee. And I can take Spike Lee or I can leave him. He's made some great things. Do the Right Thing, etc. Some other stuff that wasn't nearly as good. But I thought, all right, this is going to be a gritty urban drama. Here, I'm going from frontier time to a gritty urban drama. 28 minutes. 28 minutes, I turned it off. Again, I did not care about the characters. Now, I will grant you that at this point, it started to occur to me, maybe I'm just in a bad mood today.
Oh, man.
Maybe it's just me.
Not the clearest mind going into these movies.
And maybe I'm just getting more and more PO'd as I go through these because I can't find something I watch till the end
right. That
I'm enjoying. And it's at that point that I put on movie number 4, which I was streaming on Netflix. It's called Cake. Now, you may or may remember this movie last year. Jennifer Aniston. Because Jennifer Aniston stars in the movie, and it got some noise for her last year because it wasn't the typical Jennifer Aniston romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. She wasn't doing her standard rom-com thing where she's falling for some hunky guy that she meets cute and can't decide, does she like him, does he like her, et cetera, et cetera. That's, you know, every Jennifer Aniston movie in the last 15 years.
I like that you just used the phrase meets cute right there, too. Because
thank you.
I don't think a lot of people, yeah, that's a good phrase.
Thank you. In Cake, she plays a woman with chronic pain, serious chronic pain. All right, again, right there, not exactly the most likable character. Mm-hmm. She's an SOB, to be honest with you, but you can understand it because she's in constant pain, and she has to scrape and scrounge and lie to try to get OxyContin and Percocet, which she's basically chewing like breath savers. And the movie is essentially about her trying to deal with this. And she was part of a support group where she heard about another woman who killed herself. And she goes to the place where she had killed herself. And she's thinking about it herself. Then she gets involved with that guy's widower husband. 34 minutes.
Oh, no.
At that point, I could not make it through 40 minutes of any of these four movies.
Oh, no.
I randomly had chosen four movies where I did not care about any of these characters.
That's rough.
So there's four movies to not put on your Netflix queue. Total Recall, the remake. Watch the original. Still a very, very entertaining movie. The Homesman, Clockers, and Cake. Just absolutely not worth it. Now, before we break away here, a couple of other things. One, I was talking to Dan before the show today. Dan went to see Inside Out.
Yes.
With your girlfriend, right?
Yes.
And?
Great. It was tremendous. And it is a great, like Colin said, it's a great date movie. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have any kids with you. And the adults were laughing hysterically through the entire movie.
It works for adults and it works for kids. And there are jokes that adults will get, the kids won't. And But the kids can still enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. I think the kids enjoyed it. There were kids all around us, and the kids enjoyed it, and they were just laughing to laugh at some of the stuff. I mean, I think they got a few of the jokes, but for the most part, they were just kind of laughing to
and
laugh.
And you can even take little kids there as long as they don't sit near me. That's my attitude.
Yes.
About movies like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go sit down there in the front.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and let the kids enjoy it from there. By the way, how did it do at the box office? I know it did not beat Jurassic World.
It set a record for a Pixar movie, $91 million, and also set a record for an original screenplay. So not a sequel, prequel, adaptation, or reboot. $91 million.
Now, wait a second. I thought Toy Story 3 had made like $115 or $120 million its first weekend. Am I wrong?
I believe so. This is Pixar's... This is their beast. Maybe it's just the month. Sorry, it might just be the month, actually. I lied for an animated film. But the big thing is original screenplay.
Yeah.
It destroyed. And, I mean, that's really good. I'm happy to see it do well. And it did sort of what we expected. It trended older. Like, adults went to see this, mm-hmm. not with kids, too, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice to see.
Yeah. Will it win this weekend, or will Ted 2 beat it?
I think Ted 2 will inch above it. The question is, will Ted 2 catch Jurassic World? I think we'll have three movies that all gross between $50 and $57 million.
Wow.
And I think they'll go Jurassic Park, Ted 2, Inside Out.
Now, what's interesting about that is Inside Out, more people can see because the others are rated R, right?
PG-13 for Jurassic Park, despite the fact that they bite people in half
mm-hmm.
and crush people's heads.
Mm-hmm.
Ted is a hard R. Like, that is... That they used just about every inch of R rating outside of nudity that they could.
Okay.
I think they had to. I think they probably had to take nudity out to add some of the language.
Won't that diminish the box office potential?
Yes, but it'll be outweighed by the fact that sequels typically get between a 20% and 40% boost. I think conservatively.
And you said the first one did $500 million.
Yeah, total. And so this is going to have 50+ million. I think.
Well,
and it's getting reasonable reviews. It's not getting panned, which is going to help it.
So when Dan was telling me that he went, I asked him if he got snacks, and of course he got popcorn, and that led us to a discussion about this. Here's an idea that I wonder if movie theaters had ever tried. You know, when you go to the movie theater, if you got the biggest tub of popcorn,
it's only 50 cents more.
And it's refillable.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's the refillable part that gets me. If mm-hmm. I get popcorn at the movie theater, even if my wife and I are going to share some, we can't possibly eat more than the medium size.
Yeah.
Can you and your girlfriend, did you?
No. No, he didn't eat that whole thing. No.
Okay. Why don't movie theaters sell you a plastic tub instead of the cardboard or paper thing that they give it to you in? Why don't they sell you a plastic, almost pail of popcorn that after you're finished, whether you finish the popcorn or not, you take home with you, and then next time you bring it back, they refill it for free.
Mm-hmm. I love this idea.
So, but instead of selling it to you for $6.50 or $7.50 or $10, whatever the price is for the large one, they say to you, you know what? We'll sell you this for $25 or $30 or whatever their price point is that would work there. And then you can go into that movie theater for the rest of the calendar year
mm-hmm.
and get free popcorn for as many movies as you want to see in the course of that year.
I love the idea, and there's no way it doesn't make money. Let's assume $25. How much does the popcorn cost that they're putting in there?
Pennies?
A nickel? Yeah, maybe a nickel. So let's assume you go every week. That's 52 movies. At a nickel, that's, what, $2, $3.10 or something? They're still making money.
Yeah.
It can't be. I think that would be a great idea.
The butter, the oily, congealing butter that they put on there would raise it to $3.11.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, that's expensive to make.
But now you don't have to buy a lot of buckets because people have to bring their own in. And you're going to have people who have those who will forget to take them.
Yep.
I guess I'll buy another one.
I thought you brought it. No.
Yeah.
Why don't we just wash it and leave it in the car? Yep. Because it's still in the dishwasher at home.
They'll either buy another one or they'll go, we'll bring it next time. Let's get a medium.
Right.
And you could make it smaller than the giant bucket. You could actually make it smaller because no one really eats that giant bucket.
Right.
And they can get refills. So if they want more, they come out. But most people, when they hit the bottom, would just be, well, I'm done. I mean, so make it a little bit smaller and charge me $30 a year. And I would buy that.
Or still let people fill it refill it that day.
Who cares how many times they refill it?
Exactly.
You know, we could make the buckets and start selling them and this idea to all the theaters. Doesn't necessarily have to be where it could be Warrenburg, AMC, any theater, all the theaters around the country.
In fact, if anyone does this, I think you deserve a royalty. So,
you know what? Get Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank on the phone. He likes to do licensing and royalty deals, right?
Yep.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. So I think we get 10 cents a bucket.
In perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
Yes.
And after you recoup my initial investment,
well, I'm not putting in any initial investment. Here's my initial investment. I'm giving away yet another $1 million idea in return for a 10% royalty in perpetuity. Not 10%, 10 cent royalty.
I thought it was popcorn, not perpetuity.
I don't think it works for anything else. I don't think you could do it for soda.
Soda's expensive. You could sell them a refillable cup where they only pay a dollar each time.
Yeah, that's the other.
Charge them $10 for the cup or whatever the first time, and then it's a dollar every time they come to the movie.
A lot of restaurants do that now, too. They'll give you a cup. Oh, you can buy our souvenir cup.
It's a souvenir cup, right.
I think I saw that at Tony's.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Here's your refillable wine glass.
The five-star Michelin Tony's has a plastic souvenir cup you can come back in. Yes. Hi, I brought in my cup. Could I have some more Pinot Noir? That would be classic.
Yes, it would.
Yeah. All right. So I want 10 cents now, Warrenburg. 10 cents
there
now, AMC. For this $1 million idea. Thanks, Colin. Colin will be back with the news at the top of the hour. This portion of the show brought to you by Auric Home Centers all across the St. Louis area. All locally owned and operated. All great places for vacuum cleaners and so much more. O-R-E-C-K spells Auric.